Today's guest is Leah Simmons, the amazing human who is a certified Pilates instructor, personal trainer, and Kundalini yoga teacher with an insatiable passion for all things health and fitness. After moving to the island of Bali in 2015, Leah embarked on a four-year journey of self-discovery to uncover exactly what it took to be truly healthy and truly happy. During this time, she was introduced to a variety of modalities, discovering that there are actually four different parts of health that determine if a person is truly fit: mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, which is what she created as a result of that, which is Kaya. And we get into that during today's talk, a physical workout for your mental health. Leah is also a mother of two with a passion for her community. With over two decades of experience in the health and fitness space, she is unapologetically different, with an authentic approach to life, evoking a refreshing energy in those who meet her. I had a great time talking to her about parenting, mindfulness, presence, non-traditional aspects to relationships, and everything in between. I really, really hope you guys like this episode. She is such a likable person, so I'm glad to introduce Leah Simmons. Leah.
Hi.
Miss Simmons.
That is me.
How are you?
I'm really good, thank you.
No, now I actually want to know. So out of 1 and 10, 10 being the best you've ever felt, 1 being the worst you've ever felt, What number are you?
I'd say 8.5.
8.5.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sleep could use a little improvement.
Yep.
Other than that, I am firing.
Tell me what firing looks like for you.
So you said the best I've ever felt, okay? Yep. That doesn't mean to say that everything in my life is roses. Mm-hmm. But I think I've got to a point now where I can separate myself a little bit from what is perceived as good and bad and just look at my life as this excellent opportunity that that I have and feel really good about the things that are in it.
How do you do that? How do you separate the bad from the good and focus on the good? Because gratitude doesn't come naturally for a lot of people.
Well, I think one of the biggest things that I've learned is to remove the labels of, I guess, identifying something and calling it good and bad. In my classes, I remove words that I guess could be perceived as negative or positive, you know, the connotation, because we've been conditioned to kind of associate certain things with experiences or words. And so everything is just a sensation, right? It's not good. It's not bad. It just is. And then it's what you do with that and the relationship you have to that particular thing that will determine where you go from there. So if I look at my life, and the things that I'm experiencing in my life right now, the obstacles, the joyous moments, all of it, it's all just a path. And, you know, there was that really interesting sort of meditation analogy. I can't remember who did it. I think it was Buddha or one of those really
important dudes.
I don't know. one of his like little disciples kind of came up to him and was just like, "Oh, Buddha, I had the best meditation last night." And he literally looked at the guy and was like, "That will pass." And then the next day, "I had the worst one. That will pass." I mean, it's the same. Everything's transient. Everything is a moment. Everything is impermanent. So if you can look at, you know, zoom out a little bit on your life and not get fixated on, am I doing the right thing? Am I in the right, you know, am I going in the right direction? And just look at all of it as a series of opportunities and experiences and more like, what can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? It just gives you a little bit more room to kind of breathe and not get so down on yourself for when things don't seem to be going in the trajectory that you, you know, you anticipated.
I wholeheartedly believe that the concept you were talking about just then, which is life isn't the sum of your problems and or the stimulus that occurs. Mm. It is your relationship to it. I'm writing a book on almost that exact topic at the moment, and that things just are and we prescribe meaning to them, which then determines whether they're good, bad, and the impact that it has. And an emotion only lasts a certain amount of seconds. We perpetuate or give energy to it based on our reaction. Now, that's an incredibly tough process to do.
Agreed.
Can you tell me one or two things that helps you bring that from theoretical to practical?
Trial and error, failing. You know, if I had put this concept to my 26-year-old self, not my 46-year-old self, I think that, you know, my head would have exploded. I think life experience, being in uncomfortable situations, understanding who you are in that moment are all the things that are going to facilitate growth and help you cultivate things such as patience and compassion for yourself as well as for others in the world around you. And I think, you know, one of the biggest barrier to entries for all of this healing that we try and do for ourselves is the fact that we look at it as something that is not part, it is part of us, but it's something that we need to get rid of or something that somebody else can take away from us. Whereas if you kind of take a step back and accept responsibility for who you are in this moment, it seems like a big burden to carry, but it also gives you the power to be able to make changes, and it doesn't give that that power to anybody else. Mm. You know, I guess absolving anybody of blame for where you are and then walking towards that as a sort of, you know, sovereign being going, this is me, these are my issues, these are my problems, these are my strengths, these are my weaknesses, where do I need to learn and grow from, is a huge step to take. It's the hardest step to take, I believe, in any kind of healing journey or, you know, if you want to make changes in your life. And it's not going to be linear. You're going to go backwards. You're going to go forwards. You're going to go around and around and around. You're going to do things that won't work for you. You're going to find things that do work for you. And it's just this process of trying. Mm. I think that, you know, sitting on the fence or I guess ignoring something doesn't make it go away. Choosing something and then knowing that that doesn't work for you is power. Because then you can change your trajectory. You can go and find something else. And so to answer your question, it's just been this to-date, lifelong kind of journey of what works for me. And I'm certainly not sitting here saying that what works for me is going to work for you or somebody else. Mm. But I feel like I've finally found a combination of things that sort of allows me to you know, look at myself as a person that deserves space.
Amen.
In this world.
You do. You're an incredible human being. You deserve all the space and all the happiness. And I want to go back to a comment where you said, if I showed my younger self what this would be, what is this?
Well, I think what you're referring to is all of the you know, the realization, I guess, that life can be this fulfilling or this rich, this full, and it doesn't come from external sources. Mm. So it's all internal. It's all the internal, you know, I guess, that sense of pride that I have around where I am, the sense of I'm trying not to use the word achievement because I don't want that to be misconstrued as like, you know, I've amassed a whole bunch of things. But it's more, you know, you do pass milestones in your life, and when you can reflect on them, you actually realize how far you've come as a human. And that just comes from experience. I, you know, if I do reflect back onto where I was when I was in my mid-20s, I mean, I was dancing on a table somewhere in London, like no idea around what good mental health was, how it was linked to physicality and satisfaction and fulfillment in life. Like, just concepts weren't in my field at all.
You've done a lot of growing quickly, hey?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I have. But I also think that I had a big sort of reference library to be able to draw on to, I guess, I feel like I've had 9 lives. I mean, in a sense I have, you know, I've really done and experienced and seen things that, you know, someone would be lucky to have one of those experiences. And they all go into shaping the person that I am today, and I'm grateful for every single one of them. And, you know, I think that part of my journey, and it's not over, you know, it's this continual daily kind of choose your own adventure story that's unfolding in front of my eyes, is that I have had the opportunity to draw on all of these different experiences and, you know, no regrets, no, would I go back and do anything differently? No, you know, because I wouldn't be here.
What are you most proud of?
My kids.
Whose names are
Ryder and Lucky. Ryder, my boy, is 13. Lucky, my girl, who's 4. She's a handful.
but beautiful.
They were also going to be the answer to the question of what has been your hardest physical and mental challenge to date. My kids.
Yeah.
By far. And I've done a lot of things.
It's funny so many people describe parenting as the hardest and best thing that they've ever done. Why do you think it is so polarizing?
It is the hardest thing I have ever done. And, you know, I'm good at a lot of things.
Yeah. I concur.
It's just, it's so unique to you as an individual. No 2 children are the same. No 2 parents are the same. You are not the same every single day. They don't come with a manual.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty much winging
it.
Yeah. Don't drop them on their head and then, you know, the rest is up to you.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
pretty much the instructions when they come out. You can have 2 completely different children. You know, so when you think you've got one kind of nailed, the other one can come along and just like throw that out in the, you know, and it's 24/7. It is an always on thing that you do. There is no respite, at least for the first few years. Sleep is just, you know, a concept.
Yeah, a myth.
But at the same time, and I don't want to feel like I'm kind of this ungrateful, whinging parent because sometimes I am, but, you know, most of the time I'm not.
Sometimes we whinge.
Yes. And we're allowed to.
Absolutely.
You know, we've earned that right.
Yeah.
They can be, you know, you don't know joy or love or, you know, all of these things until the thing that has, you know, been kind of born of your flesh does something. It just makes you melt. So you can never fully describe how someone is going to feel as they're entering into parenthood, or you know, you just have to do it, or you'll see. Mm. But you know, I also say when I get asked this question, they are not only the best things that I've done, or the things that I'm most
You're
proud
not
of.
Just a mum.
I'm not just a mum. You know, they are up there for sure. But I have no ownership over my children, and I don't want to. They are very much their own beings. I can't wait to release them out into the world to foster their own lives and experiences. I really do try and give my children as much independence and autonomy as I can as a parent, because I really do believe that children, the best thing that they can do in life is to make mistakes and then figure it out for themselves.
That's a theme for you, is this trial and error. Do show up.
Test and learn, baby.
Yeah.
Test and learn. It's my motto.
Constant work in progress.
Because you never know. You won't know if you don't try.
Yeah.
You know, and I also feel like there's no wrong. It's like there's no such thing as a bad meditation.
Mm.
You've done it. You did it. You learned from it. What did you get out of it? You know, you did it. And I think that's something to be proud of. I think that there is this kind of lean towards risk aversion in society at the moment, because everything has become quite polarized and you're either on this side or you're on that side and you can't be anywhere in the middle trying to just find your way through. Whereas risks are the backbone of what gives you grit and resilience and confidence and self-belief, whether that's a tiny little risk or, you know, taking a huge leap somewhere. I think it can be scary. especially when it comes to kids, you know, or yourself. And but I think it's what helps you understand who you truly are as a person.
I would say you have a fairly non-traditional view of things, and you know, the way you look at healing, and you've combined Kaya with so many non-traditional aspects to create something beautiful. And your life has probably been non-traditional in that you've lived 9 of them, and they all have a through line in this. And I want to explore the art of non-traditional being with you, because I think you're an expert in that. And even your parenting at the moment is non-traditional.
Would you say?
Well, maybe non-conventional in that it's not a nuclear family of a married couple raising children. By no means does traditional or conventional mean better, because that is a system that has a 50% divorce rate, and not that divorce means failure, but I don't think anyone has got it right. I think to your very initial point, there is only right for you,
yes,
not right for everyone. And you're very good at working out your right. Regardless of what everyone else is doing, you're going to do you. And that's one of the things I respect about you the most. Well, what's some wisdom I want to learn from you in that? Let's just take parenting, because we're on that topic. What's a view that probably wouldn't be held by all of society that you hold and you firmly believe in?
Well, just to give context, because you've kind of touched on the fact that I have a non-traditional kind of arrangement, and I do. I have 2 children, 2 different fathers.
Mm-hmm.
They're 9 years apart, so, you know, there's a gap. My son's father lives in Sydney. My daughter's father lives in Bali. So I have a very kind of fluid schedule with both of them. I do 1 month on, 1 month off with my daughter. I do 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off with my son. I'm very lucky that I have 2 ex-partners who share the parenting responsibilities 50% of the time. They also really like each other, so that helps, and we all really get on. So I would forego traditional or conventional for successful any day of the week. What okay, we've created together as a kind of, I guess, blended modern family, if that's what you want to call it, works for us. I'm also the first one to put my hand up and say, my personality is one that cannot be with anyone, whether it's my children or my partner, 24/7. Distance for me, time for myself,
yeah,
you know, the ability to go and do the things that I want to do in my life is super important.
Yeah.
So the arrangement that we have works, and it works beautifully. Are there moments where it's like, oh, I need this? Of course, you know, nothing's infallible, but it works for us. And I think, you know, to your question, I don't know if I have any parenting wisdom, but what I would say would be, do what works for you. Just let go of the noise. So one of the biggest things that I struggled with when I split up with my daughter's father was that he wanted to move back to Bali, and we were trying to work out how that would work with Lucky, our daughter. And I, as the mother, sort of assumed the responsibility of the primary caregiver, because that's what society tends to say, is that, you know, the children should be with their mother. You can see it in, you know, if you go into any divorce agreement, it's like the father gets them every Wednesday night and every second weekend. Like, it's just a thing. And that would be a conventional, traditional solution to any kind of custodial, you know, issue that came up. I, you know, when we were working out what would be the best solution, it was me that was actually putting the mother guilt onto myself, going, what will people think if I'm away from my child for one whole month? And then, you know, and it's interesting because nobody said a thing. Like, we put all of this pressure on ourselves to try and live up to certain expectations, when in actual fact, nobody really cares, number one. Number two, if you've worked out something that is nourishing. It's not like she was going off for a month to a stranger. She was going to be with her other parent, you know, which also in turn fosters a beautiful bond between those two, which is so important in these formative years for her. And they are like,
totally. Yeah.
So instead of me looking at all the reasons why I shouldn't have done it, it's unfolded all these beautiful reasons why it does work. And so to any parent out there, fuck convention. Can I say fuck?
Absolutely.
Sorry. Fuck convention.
We're a swearing pro pod here.
Excellent. You know, work out a plan, work out what your intentions are around it, and then, you know, just don't worry about what other people think. It's not them that has to do it, live it, make sure it's, you know, if your capacity is X amount with this, stick with that. Mm. You cannot be everything to everybody. Don't try and be a hero. Everybody will just end up getting let down, especially yourself.
Mm.
So, you know, parenting wisdom 101 is most advice from parents are coming from their own shit.
Yep.
So just nod and smile. Yeah.
Smile away, boys.
Totally.
So what do you think is non-negotiable in parenting? Number one thing. If you're going to make it unconventional, what at the core needs to hold true no matter what?
A feeling of safety for the child.
Okay.
And, you know, I think we talk about this unconditional love and blah, blah, blah. That's kind of a given when you're talking about your own child. But children, they need routine, they need boundaries, and they need to feel safe. However that looks like for you, that's up to you. And they also crave consistency. And when you're talking about ferrying a child between two countries every single month, it can present a little anxiety sometimes in the child. They're used to being one place in one experience and then they're into another. If you're consistent around what they're coming back into and consistent with your emotions and, you know, and they feel safe in that environment, that is paramount.
Yeah.
Kids, especially young kids, they don't have the words to express themselves in a way that is like rational. They don't know what rational thought is. They're so present. They are like hyper-present beings. And like I've seen Lucky literally have something in her hand and she'll see something over there and this thing ceases to exist. It's gone, right? There's no putting it down nicely or putting it back where it came from. It actually evaporated out of her hand and onto the, you know.
Yeah.
So that beautiful level of presence is so magical in kids. That's why they're no filter. They see the magic in everything.
Mm.
But, you know, they also crave that anchor point and they look to you to always be tethered to that feeling of safety and consistency.
That's a beautiful analogy, that tether.
Physically
you're tethered from birth, and I think that that's a metaphor that is so key during developmental years, which is how does the parent not stifle autonomy but always be a safe place of refuge to come back to find safety as a launch pad to go back into autonomy. And then you have that interplay of independence and connectedness, which is kind
absolutely
of the perfect secure attachment style if you can straddle both parties without leaning into excess. What about relationships? What's a non-traditional view in relationship?
Intimate relationships or any kind of relationships?
Actually both for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, I found the older I've gotten, the smaller my friend circle has become.
That's not abnormal. I think most people can relate to that, right?
Yeah.
You kind of just...
You find your people and then they're your people.
Like, yeah. I'm good.
I have had some really beautiful new people kind of come into my life. I think you attract, you know, your vibe attracts your tribe or whatever you want to call it. You will attract people into your life at certain times that will have an impact on you. And I also feel like I'm now, my bullshit radar is pretty high.
Smelling that shit from a mile
totally
away. Yeah.
So I will know whether or not a relationship has legs, whether it's an intimate relationship or a friendship or whether an intimate relationship is meant to be a friendship, you know. And so, you know, it's, I don't know. I can only look at what's happening around me and in my life and the people that have come in, and people will kind of vibrate out for a little bit and then come back in. But I also know not to take any of it personally. One of my favorite quotes, and it was a book written in the 70s, I think by a female reverend, I can't remember what her name is, but it was called, "What you think of me is none of my business."
Yeah, yeah.
And I love that quote because it just encapsulates exactly that. You know, it's we walk around, whether it's consciously or not, projecting ourselves into our environment, onto other people. And sometimes your emotional state will affect, or, you know, whether you want it to or not, the people around you. And you'll see people come in, come out. I remember when I first started doing this work, you know, it was so confronting for me, that I was denying it. I was angry about it. I was frustrated about it. Like, all these emotions sort of started coming up, and people left, and that was all me, you know. And I accept that responsibility. And it's a lot for people when you are one way for so long in your life, and then all of a sudden you're going off on this different path. I mean, I was a DJ before. I was. Not totally different. I was inherently the same, but you know, focused on very different things in my life. And but then what I found is people, you know, it's cyclical, right? So it works in cycles. There's seasons of friendships and seasons of relationships. And some people are here for like the summer. Yeah. Some people are here for
season,
a
lifetime,
decade.
Baby.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I'm just, you know, I'm really grateful for all the people that come into my life. And it's, you know, I tend to always walk away from an interaction, if I've chosen to put myself into it, with some kind of insight or some little takeaway. So,
and that's a beautiful segue to kind of well-being and Kaya and stuff. Mm-hmm. What's a non-traditional view you take on the wellness industry or approach to well-being?
That it's certainly not one size fits all. There is no way, and you know, it's a very personal journey. Wellness, I guess, is a word that I've typically rejected throughout my career, because it is an industry, and it's this commercial industry. Make no mistake, there is money being made in this industry, and it's based on your illness, not your wellness, because it is trying to, I guess, it's trying to add an antidote to a whole raft of issues that are very real. Believe me, I'm not saying that they're not, but they're commoditizing it. And so I feel like it's evolved a little bit, and perhaps some of the people that are playing in the industry now, their intentions may not be, you know, whatever they.
What do you think their intentions are?
Well, I think money. Because when there's money involved, you can get skewed.
Yeah.
You know, and
can lose your way a bit.
You can lose your way and forget your why.
How have you stayed anchored to your why and not fallen to, for lack of a better word, victim to the commercialization of well-being?
Look, I'm not a saint. I have to earn a living. Yeah. I monetize things the way that I can. Yeah. I commercialize my brand as a person, as a speaker, an educator, and I'm not going to say influencer because I'm not that.
We hate the I word.
We hate the I word. Yes. Totally. And I have to come back to my why all the time, and sometimes my why changes, you know. What I try and do is, and have always done, is Kaya, and I'll use Kaya as an example because it's what I'm doing currently. Kaya was never designed for anyone else except for me. it was the collection of things that I did that kept me together, that optimized me on a daily basis, the things that worked for me. I never went out to try and design something for another person because I would never be so presumptuous to do that and go, this is what you need, or this is what wellness should mean for you. It's very personal. It takes a long time to figure out exactly, you know, what you even need to get well. I think it's this, it's a deep dive into yourself, and you have to be ready to see what's down there sometimes, because
that's hard, isn't it?
It
being
is
ready
hard
to see what's under the hood.
And sometimes we peek and we slam it down and we're like, not today.
Yeah, yeah. That's future Mitch's problem. That's definitely.
Yeah. And so Kaya was never designed for anybody else. However, because it worked so well for me and I'm a teacher by nature, I was like, I'm going to share it and just see if it, you know, if it strikes a chord with anyone else. And it
bloody has. Kaya is an exceptional community of people. You have an incredibly loyal fan base. And for anyone who's listening to this that doesn't know what Kaya is, can you kind of give the top line overview?
So Kaya is basically a workout. Okay. It's, I call it the physical workout for your mental health. I discovered quite a long time ago that we are so much more than just a physical body. You know, everything that goes into make us us is more than just flesh and bone and muscle and blood. We are emotions, we're connections, we're decisions, we're thoughts.
Spiritual.
We are, you know, we're emotional beings and that have a skin suit.
Yeah.
You know,
which is wild. I still haven't got my head around that.
Totally right. That walk around just, you know, on a good day. But we are, what we are is energy exchange.
Yes.
And for so long, because it's tangible and it's what we can see and feel and touch, about 80% of our health and wellness time and energy goes into optimizing our physical body. So what we look like on the outside. And I think, you know, not now it's becoming a little bit more, well, a lot more mainstream. But, you know, when I trained to be a Pilates teacher right back in 2006, there was no chat around our emotional health, our mental health, you know, how do we train and support those aspects.
It was very biological.
It was very biological. It was very physical. And I think also there was this misnomer that you couldn't have an impact on your mental health. You had to go and see a therapist, or you had to go and, you know, that there was no practices that you could do on a daily basis that would actually bring you up to a level of calm or, you know, positivity. Obviously, we know now that that is complete and utter crap.
Mm-hmm.
And things like meditation, you know, they're becoming not only widely accepted but essential part of rehabilitation, recovery, all of that sort of stuff. So when I discovered that, you know, we're actually made up of like four major components, so mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, I went looking for, because me being me, I like to get my workout done, right? Yeah. I don't have time to go off and do a zillion things all day. I went to look for a training program that kind of encapsulated training in all of those areas, and I couldn't find one. And then the DJ side of me was like, because when I went, and I'm fluffing because I go back and forth with the story, but you know, it's in my nature to mix things up.
Yeah,
I do it with music, I do it with food, I do it with everything in my life. I take the bit of that that I like, and then the bit of that that I like, and this, and then I create my own thing.
Definition of a true creative is who can remix the best.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I've discovered all these different modalities that had a profound effect on my life, like Kundalini yoga and breath work and all these things. But I was, these purist mentalities around you can't fuck with that. You can't. It's all right. You can't change that, or this is the way it needs to be. And I'm like, why, bro? Why can't I take...
That's my jam, is fucking with shit.
Totally. I'm going to remix this together and create the Leah version. And I think people are afraid to mess around with things.
Yeah, to smash
that
it and
they,
see the beauty.
Yeah.
So you essentially took four things, put it into one, and then put a vibe on top of it with the music, and
hell
out came Kaya.
Yes.
Nice.
I did.
Yes.
I did. And so, you know, it's this really amazing kind of practice now that gives you four very distinct outcomes. And what we've drilled down to it is, you know, it's the four pillars of Kaya are focus, train, balance, connect. That is what you will get when you do a Kaya class.
In 50 minutes?
Oh, in 30 minutes now. I've
got the express lessons?
I've got the mini lessons, got the express. Yeah, I got one for everybody. There's no excuse. You don't even need shoes.
Kaya.com?
Kaya.com.
K-A-A-I-A-A.
Yes.
Two A's on either side.
Yes.
And a K and an I.
Yeah. Do you want to know the story of the word?
Well, I know it,
you
but
know
you
it.
Tell me again for our listeners, because it's a good, because I think a lot of people are like, Kaya, how do you spell that? You must get that a million times. So tell me the genesis.
Yes. So Kaya is actually a word that comes from a language called Gurumukhi, which is the language of the Sikhs. So that's where Kundalini Yoga comes from. And it's a beautiful language. It's a bit like Sanskrit in yoga. So all of their mantras and their songs are sung in this language. And Kaya means body or self. And Kaya actually used to be called the Elevate Method when I was developing it, but it didn't have the, you know, the secret sauce at the end. It was just doing all this other stuff. And when I came back to Australia after being in Bali and decided to kind of share it with the world, I was like, the Elevate Method, it just sounds so like fitnessy and, you know, I don't know. So I found this word and it just resonated with me so well, because when I put it into capitals and it was K and then the two A's and then an I and then the two A's, I was like, oh, there's four A's. Oh, four pillars of health. Oh, four pillars of Kaya, you know, and they're like little mountains.
Like,
and
oh.
then, yeah, no, totally. Yeah. But then I'm like, oh, and they're just like hugging this beautiful eye in the center.
Yeah,
so they're
yeah.
like wrapping this
oh
eye up. And then when you get rid of the A's and you're left with K, I, what does that mean? Chi. Energy.
Key,
so,
yeah.
Key, yeah.
Which is, it could be QI, but can be KI.
It can be KI, yeah. It can be CHI, it can be QI. And so I was like, yes, this is like the gift that keeps on
grail.
Giving.
Yeah, this has got like
also,
18 meanings.
There was nothing else in the world that was called it, so I was number one on Google
SEO.
Instantly.
Really what I'm hearing is that's for the SEO.
Yes.
And that's fair. So I've done a Kaya class and
yes,
I can firsthand say it is fucking unbelievable.
Thank you.
And I mean, partly because you're instructing it, which is a gift and a curse for you, because it's kind of constrained in a way by how dependent it is on you, and having a charity like Heart on My Sleeve, it's a beauty, but also a bit of a curse to how does this grow? In spite of me or with me, but it truly does touch all of those pillars. And there's often people in your classes who are crying and sweating and shaking from their muscles being sore and healing and resting and all the above and connecting and talking and laughing. And it's such an integrated method. And I'm very glad that it's out there. What do you think has been the hardest part around trying to bring something in the world that has meaning for people?
I mean, from a practical level, just having to pivot all the time with, you know, it's such a saturated market. We enjoyed a very, I guess, you know, when COVID happened, and that's when I experienced a lot of growth in the online market coming out of that. And when everyone was just like, if I have to fucking turn Zoom on again, I will literally, like, I just, you know, so everyone was just like max X's away from their screens, want to get back into the studios, want to get back outside. I didn't, you know, I was like, oh, it's like
you had a raving online community and now everyone's trying to get back to bricks
yes,
and mortar. So
yeah.
you're like, shit, I need
so
to
what do we
again.
Do? What do we do?
Yeah.
I think for me, building a really, really solid team of having people around me that I trust and can use as soundboards, we've, you know, knowing that I don't know everything, I'm very good in my lane. You know, I have zero idea of how to run a business. And I'm going to say that with
yet
some certainty.
Yeah, well.
And I'm learning on the job.
Amen.
Literally every day
yeah.
of how to be a CEO or a founder or a, you know, somebody like, and again, my personality type, I like to be across everything. I like to see, I don't need
have
to
control.
Do everything. Well, it's, I've relinquished a lot, not relinquished a lot of that. I've let go of the need to control a lot, even though I don't have the staff to be able to give everything to yet.
Yeah.
But what I've found is, you know, exponential growth internally because of the people that are around me, which I never could have done if I had just kept it to myself. So, you know, running a business is hard. And when you are a creative and your natural instinct is to, I guess, you know, you don't, you shy away from systems and processes and, you know, not even accountability, but having to do things in a certain way to keep your head above water.
Yeah.
It can be challenging to have that yin yang kind of left brain, right brain side that needs to.
Well, it's not just left brain, right brain. It's when you're in your brain versus in your heart.
Yes.
And I think someone like you wants to spend a lot of time in your heart and in your body, and work kind of pushes you up into a cognitive mode that might not necessarily feel overly natural all the time.
So the way that I tackle that is, if the idea is formed in my heart, I know then that it is, I give it the time to develop it from my, so I'm very task driven, right? I like to see the beginning and the middle and an end. And I like to know that we're going somewhere. I don't like to waste time and I don't like to do things that sort of have no why or no reason or no intention. And so the way that I like to formulate, whether it's product development or, you know, we're working on a teacher training, just to your point now,
nice.
A way to get it into studios, which is a really, really efficient, great way. And it's actually not been done that I know of here. And but that had to come. That didn't just come, right? It came through me. And now I'm like, right, now I start doing the mind maps and now I start doing the outlines and now I start, because I know that it's come from a place of where Kaya originated from. I didn't think it. I felt it. And so then, and I can't explain what that is because that's very personal to me, but it kind of formulated inside and now I can go out and do all of the due diligence and all of the research and all of the things that in order for it to help it become. So yeah, it's a daily, you know, and I also, teaching a class for me is not doing a class, as in I still need to go off and do my own practices to ensure that I'm patient and, you know, I'm not sort of flying off the deep end. And
what are your three go-to life practices to keep you sturdy?
Yes. Breath work.
Specifically?
Depends what I need to get done. So if I need to activate my sympathetic nervous system or my parasympathetic nervous system, if, you know, if I want to calm down or if I want to kind of ramp things up, I have, you know, a sort of set that I like to do. Movement, essential for me. I need to either train, go for a run on the beach, go for a swim, get out into nature, move my body, dance, whatever, you know, whatever it looks like, have to do that. And then a moment of stillness, and that could be, you know, a sauna or a facial or some kind of self-care. It could be a meditation. It could be sitting at my piano and having a play. It could be anything that is just focusing on one thing. The outside world kind of goes away for a moment and I can just come into, you know, a moment of presence with myself, because I think that's, we spend so much time in our head in the past and in the future that cultivating presence is really the key It's the goal.
It really is. And I think the future and the past is often where a lot of suffering lies. How have you ever hit rock bottom?
I have no idea.
Have you ever hit a point where you think this is more pain than I've expected to feel ever?
Honestly, no.
That's amazing.
Have I had pain in my life and felt despair? And yes. Did I think that I would never come out of it? No.
Why?
I'm pragmatic. I think that I'm not overly, I mean, I'm an emotional person, but I'm also quite, I don't like to dwell in things for too long. I mean, it's hard for me to, because I'm trying to think back to, you know, a moment in time. Probably, you know, I had, when I was going through all of this work and I was in Bali, I was on an island with my sort of spiritual teacher, and we did this thing, and I actually ended up paralyzed from my waist down for like a day because I was like, it was just such a shock to my body and my energy centers and stuff that I was unable to move, but I wasn't afraid. I was in pain, but she was there. You know, I think about my breakups and all of those moments in my life, but it's funny because we talked at the beginning about our relationship with things. Mm. I look back now and go, that was the best thing that ever happened to me, or I'm so glad I went through that. Like, I don't know if rock bottom or even rock top are a thing. It feels like that in the moment. But then we always have the ability for perspective and to change our relationship with anything that we're going through. And I think that the skill comes in doing it closer and closer to the actual moment itself. So, you know, not letting yourself sit in that feeling of despair or and going, right, I'm here.
Mm.
What am I going to do about it?
Mm.
What do I need to change? What step can I take in what direction to just take me off this path?
You're very proactive, very practical. And has that part of you, that tenacious side of you, ever stifled a softer part that wants to just stay still and hurt for a little bit and feel?
I'm sure.
Yeah.
100%. I mean, I would say if you had asked me, have I ever had my heart broken? I mean, we're having an honest moment here, you know. I would probably say no. But then does that also mean that I've never actually experienced pure love? Maybe. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that because I have nothing to compare it to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I haven't been there. I've experienced love as I've experienced it. I've experienced hurt as I've experienced it. Have I been curled up in the fetal position on the floor crying for hours and days? And no.
Mm.
It's just, it's just not the way that I.
Yeah, I think you have an incredible protection mechanism inbuilt that, and you're incredibly naturally resilient, and you've also done a shit ton of work to become resilient. But by no means would I call you cold. I mean, you're an incredibly empathetic, soft person, and you just have a fucking good shield and warrior that stands out the front.
I would actually say to you that I'm not an empath.
Really?
100%. If I took on the energy of all the people that I am in front of on a daily basis, especially in the classes, I would melt.
Hmm.
I have compassion and I will show up and I will be there for you and I will listen and I will offer you whatever you want from me, but I will not take on what you're giving.
Agree. I think the technical definition of an empath is absorbing without consent someone else's energy and emotions. So I agree you're not an empath. I think you're empathetic.
I'm empathetic,
as in
yes.
You feel with people.
Yes.
It's just you know when to leave it with them and in that moment. Mm. I would consider myself in the same group. There's no way I could do what I do if I took home everything that got onboarded every day. It's a lot. You said at the start that you were an 8.5. What's the 1.5 gap?
The sleep.
Sleep.
Yeah. My sleep is rubbish. Like I'm trying to,
Trying to monitor that sleep.
Trying to, And I do all the things and I know all the things to do and I've got my nighttime ritual. But I feel like there's a whole, you know, especially when I have both of my kids with me, I just sleep with one eye open. Like I can't help it. I've put, you know, I'm trying to get my daughter into her own bed, which has worked, but then at least once a night she's walking down the hallway and I hear my 14-year-old son fart. Like I just, and I'm saying that literally and figuratively. I think when you're a parent, you're attuned to, you know, yes. And sleep could definitely be improved. I look at it like there's fine tuning to be had everywhere. And I don't know. I mean, if you get to a 10, do you stay at a 10? Where do you go from 10? Mm. Is there another scale of amazingness I'm happy with where I'm at.
What's the greatest life lesson you've ever learned?
That something for nothing has no value.
And I think that's pretty full circle to the start, which is this theme around trial and error and your inbuilt nature of doing. A lot of what you're talking about and the character that you have is about earning and like literally sweating out for what you have. And I think that, you're someone who places a lot of value on the amount of times you can revolve and tweak and become more efficient and end up in a different place. And that could be in a relationship evolving. Mm. It could be in business evolving, but it's growth, 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 right?
I think it's just motion. Mm. Where are you if you can't adapt?
Yeah.
What does that mean for your, if you're just fixated on this one way and that way is not working, then you're falling off the twig.
Flexibility.
I mean, you've got to be flexible. You have to be able to, if that's what you want.
Yeah.
You know, and if you want it enough, and this is the other thing, and this is what separates people that succeed, I'm sorry to say it, and then the 95% of startups that fail, is that ability to pivot, that ability to be flexible, that ability to adapt, that ability to maybe change. I mean, what's really interesting is with Kaya, the product itself has not changed one iota. We're still using the same music as we were 2 years ago. It's the product is amazing. The way we talk about it, the way we have to
the wrapping paper.
The wrapping has changed a thousand times.
Amen. Yeah, it really is the wrapping paper on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. And you have to be willing to let go of some things that you really held on to at the beginning because you thought this was the best, you know. You can't work in an echo chamber and expect the world to come on board. Mm. You have to put stuff out there into market. You have to test and learn. You have to learn, I think, is the biggest thing from that phrase, is if you want to make a dent, if you want to carve your path, if you want to make a difference, I have learnt in my 17 years in the health and wellness industry and all the training that I have done and all the books I've read and all the – I have learnt the most from my students. Hands down, they have taught me and shown me what Kaya is because it's for their – you know, it's their experience. It's them practically applying it to their life and then sharing the feedback. And if I don't take that on board and, you know, I'll have no, there'll be no one left. Mm. There'll be no customers.
Totally. And so your students know you well, your friends know you well. I'd like to consider someone who knows you pretty well, given we've known each other for a while and I really value our connection. What about people who don't know you well? This is more a probing question, I guess, for yourself. What do you wish people knew about you, but they might not?
That I am approachable and warm and generous and
when
funny.
I first met you, I thought you were the coldest. Not met you. When I saw you walking around, I'm like, oh, that's that scary, really ripped woman with arms like shredded steel. And then when I spoke to you, I'm like, oh, you're so lovely.
Yeah. And, you know, I think people get a bit like, I think there's, you know, I'm tall, I've got a shaved head, I've got 18 piercings in my face, I have, you know, a quite a muscular physique. You're going to draw conclusions. And fair enough, you know, that I can't stop people from doing that. But I'm not a robot, I'm not a cyborg, I'm not an AI generated, you know.
People ask that?
Oh, 100%.
Oh, what the fuck?
I actually had someone, funnily enough, that took one of my videos off Instagram and created an AI version of me, and we looked the same.
Oh my God.
I know.
Stop doing that, whoever's out there doing that.
And I'm goofy and I don't, you know, and I like, I think that, I don't know, but I think that's with anyone, right? We have first impression when you've never spoken to someone before is you just form a picture and that's judgment. We can't get away from it. We judge all day, every day. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what I would say, it's like no man ever comes up to talk to me. You cross the road to come and talk to me because you are a very, you know, self-confident, self-aware human. But boys don't talk to me. I think they're intimidated or they're afraid. Women, on the other hand, will go out of their way to come, and I think they're curious more than anything.
Yeah. What's going on
you
here?
Know, talk to me about this.
Yeah.
So it's just it's really interesting. I can't help the way that people perceive me in the world. I can only work on my own energy, the energy that I give out, and I think it's also why I introduced the incredibly daggy 80s dancing at the beginning of all my classes was to just show people that I can be a huge dag.
Yeah.
And I love music and
play is important.
Absolutely.
Right? Not to take yourself too seriously.
100%.
If you were, God forbid, on your deathbed and you were holding your phone and you had one Instagram post or tweet to write that would kind of be your parting words, what would it be?
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. You know me. I get fucking deep. That's what I do. It's my jam.
I don't know. I haven't thought about, I mean, first of all, what am I doing on my deathbed holding my phone?
Yeah.
Literally, that would just not happen. Or it might. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't think so. I think you'd be like, fuck this. I'm going out in style and like totally. Get a facial or something.
What would I post? I don't know. See you soon. I have no idea. I have trouble. I have a very love-hate relationship with social media and, you know, manufacturing things for public consumption that isn't in the moment and real to me, which is why most of my stuff is always a snippet of a live class that I've recorded or, you know, I'm a one-take gal. Like, I'm the worst actress in the world. Make me learn a script, I will flub it.
Yeah.
Sit here, have a chat.
Yeah.
Pearls of wisdom just flowing. Like, you know, one after the other. You have a wisdom. You have two. You know, and that's the way that I like to do it. And yes, 95% of it ends up on the cutting room floor, but most of the time there comes something, you know, something comes out that is is worth using.
I'm going to reword it. Imagine that you leant into your daughter's ear on her 18th birthday and you're not saying I love you or I'm proud of you. What are you telling her in terms of advice?
I am telling her, don't sweat the small stuff. You got this. Literally, enjoy now. Be present.
Do you have a tactic or a tool to bring you back to the present when you lose sight of it?
So, practically, breath work.
Okay.
Just catapults you straight back into that present moment because you have to really focus on doing it. I mean, I don't know. It's easy to say take 10 deep breaths. To be present with those breaths in and then those breaths out and then back in again. I mean, I challenge anyone who doesn't have a thought floating in, and it's impossible to stop your thoughts coming. Where the skill lies is noticing it, not attaching to it, parking it. It might be an important thought, but then coming back to what you're doing. And you can't not be present when you're focusing on what you're doing right now. And it's a practice. It takes practice. There's, you know, this, they call it work for a reason, because it takes work. It takes commitment. It takes time, and you've got to make the time to do it. But it's worth it.
It's so worth it.
It really is.
It's so worth it, and it's been really worth it for me to hear not only more of your story, but also the way you view the world. I think it's incredibly unique and valuable, and I'm honored that whoever listens to this will get a daily dose of Leah. To end, I'd like to ask you, what's one question that you wish I'd asked you but I didn't?
Well, I'm actually going to tell you the question that I'm really glad you didn't ask me, which is what I always get asked, and that's, what's your day on a plate?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I've said what I was meant to say. We've had the conversation we were meant to have. We've had a squillion conversations before, and we'll have a million conversations after this.
Yeah.
And whatever has eventuated in this moment is perfect. There's nothing burning that I feel like I need to.
You kind of just answered it though, which is that in a way, and again, to get a bit meta, your answer reflects your kind of approach to life, which is like, I'm not going to force it. I'm going to keep showing up and be as present as I can. If you were supposed to ask something, you would have asked it.
And
there's a bit of a through line of trust there in your life. Like, you really do trust your wings, not the branch.
That's been recent, I have to say, though. Like, it is a, I think that the more you use the wings, the more you can trust that they'll,
because there's evidence.
Yes.
You need to be able to evidence in your own capability, for sure.
Yes.
Leah, thank you so much.
You are so welcome. What a pleasure. Thank you.
And we find you at Leah Simmons on Instagram.
No, I am Leah Simmons.
I am Leah Simmons. Simmons with two M's.
Two M's.
One N.
One N.
And Kaya at Kaya.
So Kaya is at This Is Kaya.
Okay, at This
That's
Is Kaya.
Instagram, yeah.
And the website for Kaya.
Kaya.com.
Kaya.com. All right, if you don't go there, then fuck you doing. Peace out.